If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Tonight we welcome one of the most influential and groundbreaking voices in comedy and television. George Lopez's rise began on the stand-up stage, but one of the defining milestones in his early career was his first appearance on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. He went on to become a trailblazer in TV as the star and co-creator of the hit ABC sitcom George Lopez, one of the first network sitcoms to center on a Latino family, and later reshaped late-night television as host of Lopez Tonight. George's legacy is part of the evolution of late-night television exhibit, now featured at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where his contributions stand alongside the legends who shaped the medium. And George will be appearing live this Saturday, Valentine's Day, at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. Who wouldn't want to spend Valentine's Day with George Lopez? For tickets, you can visit GenesseeTheater.com. And George Lopez is back with us tonight. George, welcome back to the show and welcome back to Chicago, my friend.
Thank you very much. I love Chicago so much. I love that whole area.
I love it. And you were just mentioning to me off air that WGN, as soon as cable came on, you got WGN in your place. The Cubs, Bozo, all of it.
Everybody was there, yep.
I love it. I love it. You know, your recent sitcom, Lopez versus Lopez, was such a great personal project with your daughter, Maya, and now you are back on the road doing stand-up across the country. How does it feel returning to live audiences after that chapter in television?
You know, I think because I kind of started in stand-up, and what I would tell everybody is, like, you know, I'm just full of, like, recollections and things, you know. So, you know, my grandmother always had a couple of pans. One was always ready to cook. The other one was always ready to boil. So I think in stand-up,
yeah.
I think, you know, I've always managed to keep the ideas coming because of the stand-up and because you're free-thinking and you got all day. And when you're doing the sitcom, you're rehearsing all day or on other people. And, you know, it's really not inventive, or it's collaborative. It's not inventive. And you know, by the time the week comes around, you know, you just rehearse that thing to death. And, you know, stand-up is still the freest form of expression.
Sure.
I believe it's free-form expression if you use it to express yourself. If you, you know, depending on what your material is, then you're choosing that road. But, I mean, even on the freeway, there's roads. There's sure. A lane you take if you're going faster. There's a lane you take if you go slower.
Well, speaking of that lane, like, at what point did you say, I want to make people laugh, I want to get into comedy? Because I believe your comedy influences were Richard Pryor, Freddie Prinze. Talk a little bit about, like, what got you into all this?
I would have to say that I was an only child. My grandparents raised me. Neither of them were humorous at all. Only until they got older did I find them both really funny. But I believe that in the cartoons, in the finding of, you know, what can I go back and remember seeing? I remember seeing, Jack Benny. I remember seeing Jack Parr. I remember the sitcoms, and I remember the people, you know. So then Carlin, sure. Pryor,
yeah.
Little Lenny Bruce, you know, George Carlin, Richard, Cheech and Chong. And then, you know, in 73, I was like 12. So, I mean, it was really kind of the perfect place to start.
Absolutely. And I heard you say before, though, in interviews that there kind of was comedy in your house, but not traditional comedy. It was kind of from a negative perspective.
Every time, you know, my grandmother was great because anytime some accident would happen, she would say, I wish I had my camera, but never when it was anything good.
That's great.
Sure.
I've heard you talk about, like, if you crashed your car, you know, the nice job. Congratulations.
Hey, I wish I had two of you right now. Yeah.
Exactly. How did you find your voice and your approach on stage? Because you can find the funny, you can write the material, but, like, how did you find your voice and how you were going to deliver? Because it's been...
Well, man, I mean, it's really like a computer program. You know, the mind is more powerful than a computer. And if you've been thinking about the same things over and over, you tend to get an algorithm of sort, right? So, you know, I'm not that involved in the space program, but I wouldn't write next jokes about it. But I was in San Antonio last weekend, and I said, it's the first parade where people were looking over their shoulders.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
They got it.
For sure. Yeah.
They
got it. Yeah. What did you personally love about Pryor and Prinze? Like, how did they, the edginess, the taking risks, like, what was it about them?
I think there's just two different loves. You know, Richard was more because he was raised by his grandmother, and that, you know, he came from a hard place. The you know, I'm not even sure I knew what a brothel was back then, but I knew that his material was very much like the guys that I heard talk, the brothers and the uncles and people in school and older Chicano guys, you know. So I was attracted to that. And, you know, that was an album. So we'd sit in the room and you could you just were imagine yourself there. So and Freddie was really visually like falling in love with a woman at the first time you saw him. And I mean, I was, you know, so connected to him, too. Yeah. And, you know, I remember it was just the anniversary of his death just passed. And I could, you know, somebody said, I think Cedric told me that. He goes, you know, when George talks, he gives dates, he gives times. And it's like, I don't remember any of that stuff. But I remember dates, times, and things. And as I drive in the car, I can remember what was there before and all those things, which I think helps my mind.
You know, you mentioned the anniversary of his death. I remember as a kid watching Chico and the Man, and then all of a sudden he was gone and somebody else took his place. I mean, sitcoms sometimes can be ridiculous when somebody passes on. They got to keep the train going. That sitcom was all about him.
Oh, man, you know, that was a bad look. I mean, I they could have easily said, you know, due to the tragedy of Force, unforeseen, that we're not going to continue the show. But in the actual Chico and the Man, that unfortunately that kid doesn't get really remembered a lot.
No, doesn't.
But Freddie was I actually thought yesterday about writing a book about him I think that would be a good project to have. I mean, I'd back and investigate, talk to his friends, and I think I might do that.
I like that. I like that. And, you know, I mean, he was an influence. And I was going to say, like, when you look back at the pioneers, like, you know, there wasn't many. I mean, Desi Arnaz in the 50s, who was Cuban, Freddie Prinze, who was Puerto Rican and German in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And then all the way to your show in 2001. Yeah. I mean, it's very few and far between. Yeah. We didn't do a good job with that.
No, you know, even Norman Lear tried, but it's not, you know, I think the thing that was different about my show was that I had done stand-up, and I had been doing it for, you know, 20 years or so, 25 years. And I think when Bruce Helford, you know, did Drew Carey, worked on Roseanne, I think, and he's from Chicago.
Mm.
And when we got into the room, I don't think those guys expected me to have the detail that I had. Even though I didn't have the writing experience of TV, I had things that those guys could not ever find or ever create.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which were the great stories.
Absolutely. You were on stage first time at 18 years old, but you got Johnny Carson. And, you know, there's just so many people that talk about comedians today are discovered on social media for the most part. But, like, Johnny and that show, that was the defining moment when you got asked to go on that show and perform. That was it. How did that moment happen for you to begin with?
Man, it's crazy. You know, I just happened to be at the Improv. And Jim McCauley was always hanging out there. He was a talent booker for The Tonight Show. And he was in the room when I was in there. And George Shapiro, who handled Seinfeld, and Diane, another manager, were in there. And they were standing next to him. And he looked at them and said, "Do you represent him?" And they said, "No, but we're looking at him." And he said, "Oh, good. Tell him that, you know, to prepare some material. Tell him to give me a call. We'll be able to work something out."
Wow.
So yeah, it's funny because, you know, I'm a big Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in Vegas, like in the summer of 90, when he announced that he was going to retire and that there were six spots open for new comedians, not ever imagining I'd be one of the six.
That's amazing. And you did this set in front of Johnny and Bob Newhart. So no pressure whatsoever there.
Yeah, no pressure whatsoever. and Ed and Doc, everybody was there.
Yeah, well, and I watched the set from Carson last night because, you know, we have an exhibit I was mentioning about Johnny Carson, but you were talking about, still stands up. The whole thing was so great. You were talking about cars, and you said, "My grandfather thought AAA was for people with serious drinking problems."
Serious drinking problems, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. That must have been surreal. Must have been surreal for you.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a wild thing, you know, and a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, my wardrobe person, Michelle, came to me and said, "I got a weird, you know, I know this guy, Hans, who's a jeweler," and he said, "You know, George is in the comedy, he's like into the history of comedy. Ask him if he'd be interested in buying Johnny Carson's presidential Rolex."
Wow.
And Johnny wore it from 79 to 92. He wore it on the night he retired, and it's in the other room right now.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, he had it on
when I did the show.
Wow. What a great memento to have of Johnny. Holy cow.
You know, I wear it just to wear it. I mean, I can't imagine that thing belongs to me. I remember GQ did a story about Johnny, and his wife gave it to him, you know, Alex, and he wore it the first night, and it just shined like this disco ball. And if you watch Johnny Carson over the years, he pulled his sleeve on the left arm because he felt it was too much, so he tried to cover it.
I'm going to have to watch that for sure. You know, Johnny is such a big part of life and getting on The Tonight Show, but you met Arsenio Hall in the late 80s, and you said that meeting changed your life.
Yeah, I mean, I had never really... I knew of Arsenio back then, and he had walked into the Improv again, you know, and his show had just started. I think it was the middle of February 89. Funny to think that he'd be at a comedy club. I was never at a club. And when I was done with my set, he walked me out into that alley and said, "Hey, Harvey sent me the tape, this guy Harvey I was working with." And he said, "But... have him give me a call, man. I think we could work something out." I remember him pointing that long finger at me. I was like, "Oh, man." And we're still friends today. Tomorrow's his 70th birthday party, or his birthday.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But we stayed friends, you know, through the whole, you know, I was on his show maybe 16 times.
Wow.
And then we'd see each other, and we still work quite a few times a year at the Laugh Factory, or we talk on the phone all the time, and, you know, he texts me all the time. He's just a great... He's been one of my longest... friends, but also, you know, helped me out through some really, really, you know, through the divorce and with mine not talking to him. He helped me through that. That's really kind of, you know, there's not a lot of friends in comedy that you would take that kind of interest. So, you know, it goes beyond, I'm glad that our relationship goes beyond just, you know, us having doing the same thing for
sounds
a living.
Sounds like it. Absolutely. George will be appearing live this Saturday, tomorrow, Valentine's Day, at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. For tickets, visit GeneseeTheater.com. And there's more with George next, right here on 720 WGN. Comedian George Lopez is with us. George will be appearing live this Saturday, tomorrow, Valentine's Day, at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. For tickets, visit GeneseeTheater.com. So, George, when your sitcom premiered in 2001, it was truly groundbreaking. And we were talking about other pioneers like Desi and Freddie Prinze, but then your own role as the first Mexican-American to headline a network sitcom. What does that legacy mean to you? And how do you view the progress or lack of progress in Latino representation on television today?
Well, you know, that show has been on the air ever since 2002. And I mean, now it's on Hulu, it's on Peacock, it's on
25 years.
TV.
Yeah.
Mine, the first one, yeah. And, you know, arguably, I think I would say that some of the greatest sitcoms would be Frasier and Roseanne. And in Cozy TV, the first 6 hours from 6 a.m. to noon is 2 hours of Frasier, 2 hours of Roseanne, and 2 hours of my show.
Amazing. You gotta love
daily.
That.
So, you know, there's people that could say, well, it wasn't, you know, Will and Grace. It wasn't time. Very few things are. But if you talk about something that's never been, and then it's been for the last 23 years every day, that's powerful.
It is. Absolutely powerful. Shortly after this first sitcom ended, here comes Late Night Television and Conan. And I was mentioning you're part of this exhibit at the Broadcast Museum. And Late Night has always been a very exclusive club. And when you became a host, did you feel the weight of that responsibility to open doors? And did you think the industry made any progress since then yet? I mean, that must have been surreal to do the talk show.
It was amazing to do the talk show. I would say that if they would have just left us alone, we were really doing all right as a team and as a show. We were like, nobody could get the bookings that we were getting in Los Angeles. You know, Conan's show had just started even Conan pushed me an hour back, and he couldn't get anybody really significant to be on the show. They'd call over and say, "Hey, you think people would like talk to a couple of your guests and see if they might not want to come by our show?" Because, you know, it's the difference between, you know, relatability and sure, kind of like that National Lampoon stuff, you know. So we were doing great. It's just, you know, it's like, if you're gonna go swimming, get wet. That's what Peratori would say, and they wanted to go swimming, but they didn't want to get wet. They had just left us alone, I think we'd have been all right.
I hear that from so many people who are starting sitcoms, talk shows, and so forth, but it's like, you can't get out of their own way to allow the creativity to just happen. And I think the shows that were most successful is when that did happen. But like, you watched late night shows like I did, like all your life, like
did it
give you a change your appreciation for the craft of hosts and Like, I mean, it's constant. It's every day.
Yeah. You do get that Groundhog Day. Like, wasn't I just here feeling? But I enjoyed it. I even went to the gym, preparatory, and I said, hey man, do you think I need to go like to a school to somebody teach me how to interview people? And he's like, oh no. He goes, you're curious, man. That's all you need to be. You listen and you're curious, and that's all you need to do. Just be curious as you are. You're a fan of the people that you're a fan of the music. You're a fan of the people, and you just let it guide you. I mean, we'll guide you a little bit, but we want you to be you.
I love hearing that too. What do you think about the state of late night today? You say you're still watching younger people. You know, we talk to younger people about the fact that what do you watch on late night, and most of them say, well, I catch Fallon the next day on Instagram or on Snapchat for 2 minutes, 3 minutes because he's doing a bit. He's not very political, so it's just he's having fun on the air. But late night's very different than it was, not only when Carson was on, but when you were on.
I think, I think there's still a bunch of, there's still a bunch of diners, there's still a bunch of guards, and there's still a bunch of hospital waiting rooms that would have a talk show on and not change the dial. Somebody rent a car, 24 hour rent a car, bail bonds place. Those are the places that one time I was driving and I asked a guy in an apartment and my late night show was on.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that must have been cool to see that.
Yeah.
And your love for stand up is evident and being in front of a live audience, and that's what you're going to be doing here in Chicagoland on Saturday.
Yeah, it's way different than anybody's ever seen me do it, and I think it's just if I don't have so many things I have to gear myself up for. But stand-up is not it. I mean, I, if it was a person, I would tell it I love it every day, but I think it's in me, and it knows that I love it every day.
Love it. George Lopez will be appearing live this Saturday. Tomorrow, Valentine's Day at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. Thank you, my friend, and welcome back to the Windy City.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A great interview. I appreciate it. Thank you.